I want to talk to you about attention to detail for a moment. What makes the dimples on a golf ball so important? What may seem insignificant, but without them, your ball wouldn't travel half as far as, or in Neil's case, attempt to go straight. Those ball manufacturers measure to make sure each one of those dimples is right to within 1/1000th of an inch. That's the kind of attention to detail you'll see in Cooper Discoverer's and Duramax SUV tire. From severe weather traction to durable tread technology, every last inch of the Enduramax is designed to give you the best ride possible for as long as possible. All Cooper tires are backed by a limited warranty, a 45-day test drive warranty, and select products are backed by Treadwear Mileage Warranty, helping to give you confidence on the road. For complete product and warranty details, please visit www.coopertires.com or www.coopertires.ca. And remember, go with the Coopers.
Welcome back to the Crash Course Podcast. Solly here. This episode today is about the Old Course at St. Andrews, my favorite golf course in the world. This was recorded on the No Laying Up podcast feed back in 2018. Thought about redoing this one, but listened back to it, and our thoughts on the golf course are pretty well encapsulated here. And without any further delay, enjoy.
Moving on from North Berwick, we made the drive up about 2 hours to St. Andrews. We spent three nights in the town of St. Andrews. We stayed at the David Russell Apartments there, which is basically like a dorm in some way.
University of St. Andrews.
Yeah. I wouldn't change anything about that. I think that's kind of a cool way to take in the town. We went to the Dunvegan that night, of course. The famed hotel/bar. There, just about maybe 300 yards from the 18th green, which has just artifacts and pictures. And the pictures of all, basically anybody who's ever played the Old Course that is famous is photographed there with Sheena, the old owner of the bar. It's now under new management, but they still kept all of the relics.
It looked exactly the same.
Yeah, it's the exact same experience. It's just not her behind the bar there anymore. But great place for burgers and beers and food, and it is just you can't go to St. Andrews and not go in the Dunvegan. You meet people from all over the world in there. You meet people from all over the United States really in there for the most part, but it is a staple of that town, and for good reason. I think a trip to St. Andrews, every time I go there, I end up playing more golf than I probably should, and I should just spend more time hanging in pubs like that or places like that. So
that was a very Shooter McGavin sentence.
What's it?
Every time I come here, it gets harder to leave.
It was just weird. Like you pull in St. Andrews and we parked right next to the 18th green, and
Trump's
just kind of see it, and you're like, holy shit. Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, it's real. Yeah.
Wait, I can park right next to the 18th green? Like, it's and so, yeah, our plan. I know we, on last year's podcast, we detailed kind of ways to get on the Old Course, but quickly go over it. It is the hardest tee time, obviously, to get, but it's also a course that you can get on if you're dedicated to it. You can book a tee time well in advance, usually through a travel planner in some way, or you can do advanced bookings, I think, right around now for 2019 if you want to. If you want to base your trip around it and have a set tee time at the Old Course, you can do that. You can also go online and enter the ballot 2 days in advance. I am personally 0-4 entering the ballot. I've never won it, but you can enter to sign up between 2, 3, and 4 people, I think, to be awarded a tee time. I don't know how many tee times they keep. We were visiting at one of the busier times of the year, the week before the Open, so I'm not that surprised that we didn't win the ballot, especially entering as a foursome. But those are the two ways to plan in advance to get a tee time.
And granted, the people I got paired with eventually won. They entered the ballot twice in 1 week and won both times.
Yeah, so it does happen.
It definitely happened.
The system hates me, I guess. But the third way, which is the way that we chose, and the way I've been 3-for-3 in playing the Old Course, is go to the old pavilion there right next to the first tee, lining up. We lined up around 3:15, 3:20, I think is when we got there, a.m.
We had a little scare, Randy.
Randy overslept a little.
We thought we lost Randy.
We wanted to make it by 3. We were lucky enough, to cross paths timing-wise with Poosh Daddy, from the lead singer from Iration. He was there. He beat us there. He was 7th in line. He got there at 3, 7th in line. We were 8, 9, 10, 11 in line. They open the doors at 6 at the old pavilion, and they will show you what tee times they have available. and you can kind of choose what when you want to go. And we, you know, the five of us, we're, again, 7 through 11 in line. We all were teeing off, like, 12:10, 12:20, 12:40, and 12:50. Paired up with different people, we all got separated. I was fortunate enough to get to play with Poosh Daddy, whose real name is Micah.
Mr. Poosh.
Mr. Poosh. So we all kind of had a different old course experience. We didn't all get to play it together, but we all got to play within an hour of each other and enjoy pretty much the best walk in golf. I'm in search of an experience that is better than the old course. But for the two that just had played it for the first time, I want to hear what your big takeaway was from the old course.
It was like, I had really, really, really high expectations. And after the drive on the second hole, I was like, all right, cool. This is going to surpass all of those expectations. I get it. And yeah, I mean, I just, you know, if you don't like the old course, you can get the hell out.
Period, point blank.
Yeah.
Which we did meet a couple of those people in the bars and stuff who were, you know, yeah, look, I went and played the old course. You know, it's kind of something you have to do. It's not my favorite. You know, I thought it was just okay.
But, I've never played a course where after every, like, normally after you play a course, you're like, oh, man, I want to go play that course again. After every single hole, I didn't even want to go play the next hole. I just wanted to go play that hole over and over and over again and keep unlocking the secrets to it.
To DJ's point, though, like, people that say that, I can understand that. I honestly can. I mean, it's not, visually, it is a bit funky, and it's not something that's just going to blow you away visually. And honestly, probably my first time playing it, a lot of the nuance was for sure lost on me. I was expecting it to just blow me away visually, and it didn't. Until I started to kind of start to figure out, honestly, it was the caddy that I had when I played it last year. His name's Brett Murray. I stayed in touch with him after the round because he was such an awesome caddy in pointing out all the different options you have off the tee and the strategies that he was lining me up for. And he's like, all right, yeah, you're 156 here. We want a 112 shot. And I was like, what? He's like, it's going to hit that swale and it's going to run out and be 15 feet short. And it would. So I stayed in touch with him. I was like, all right, that you are caring for me again this time around. And again, he just would blow my mind with, like, all right, 16th hole, we're going to play this one like the pros play. We're playing down three fairway right now because of where the pin is and blah, blah, blah. We're going to take the OB out of play. And just the amount of ways you can play these golf holes and the slopes you got to play around, I can't imagine a more fun, strategical golf course to play. The options are legitimately endless.
And I think because of that, it turns into this just like crazy, hectic war zone. Yeah. Just balls are flying all over and you're hitting into groups and groups are hitting into you.
Four groups on the same plot of land.
Which sounds crazy and stupid, but when you're doing it, you're like, oh god, this is the best.
It's glorious madness.
It is glorious madness.
Like the 7th and 11th holes cross and you might have two or three groups on each hole plus the caddies. There might be like 35 people on the same piece of the property at the same time. And yeah, it's awesome. It's the just best. Madness. Tron and I actually got to – we crossed as he was playing 11 and I was playing 7. I told him to crack on. And, it's the greatest. I'm forever enthralled by that golf course and don't think it's everyone you can totally figure out and totally know every in and out of. But, like, I want to continue to play it. And the students that get to, like, live there for a summer and play it 30, 35 times, that might be the golf dream for me.
Yeah. Go ahead.
You guys nailed it with just kind of the madness. I almost liken it to trying to play golf in the middle of a busy airport. Like, imagine like Terminal B at O'Hare, and like everybody's just playing golf, going different directions, and you just like, what is going on out here? And then you get to 18, and there's tourists like running up on the bridge to take pictures, and it is just kind of like a glorious mass of humanity.
When we got to 18, there was this, I think they were Korean family, you know, this guy just no regard for us playing the golf hole, runs out on the bridge, stands there. He's got his foot up like you know, Alexander the Great, just conquered the golf course. And, you know, we get up to him, we think he's going to get out of the way. And he's like, hey, can I borrow your golf club? Like, I forgot my golf club. Like, oh yeah. Like, you were going to bring it for this. And he borrows my playing partner's golf club, and he stands there with his club over his shoulder. And I mean, it was just, I don't know.
Didn't he ask one of you guys to take the photo too? Like, you're the ones playing the hole?
Yeah, exactly. And he was just, it's just a complete madness. It's the best.
So I think I actually enjoyed, like, I was paired up with a father and his two sons.
I kind of liked, like, no offense to you guys. Yeah. We played a lot of golf together. Yeah. It was fun to get out and, like, go play with some other people.
Yeah. So, I was with this family from Mexico, and one of the sons, you know, he showed up, I think, to the pavilion at 3:30 a.m. and he was wearing like a full-on Gucci,
like, tracksuit.
Yeah, tracksuit. And I was like, man. And then I ended up getting paired with him, and one of them,
they're like, "You two look like you guys would have a lot to talk about."
So on the first hole, he shanks one, he hosels one across the Himalayas putting green.
Which, again, is just a massive humanity. It's like
there's hundreds of people out there putting. And, you know, the caddy goes over and, like, apologizes to everybody. And people are just scurrying about. And then on 18, he basically hosels, like, a three-wood or a driver off of one of the hotels, one of the buildings down the right. Like,
it'd be
so
sweet if
right.
It was a three-wood, like, he was trying to play really sensibly.
And then hits, like, almost hits a couple walking their dog. And yeah. it was madness. It was awesome.
It's the best.
The whole thing, I don't know if this is a good comparison because I'm not a huge fan of, like, visiting D.C. or maybe I've just never been there at the right time, but it just feels like going to, like, a capital city of golf, you know? And it's just... there's tourists everywhere, but still you're kind of like, man, this is really cool to see. This is, you know, I don't know if that makes sense or not, but, and then the Dunvegan, I think, is kind of like
there's no novelty.
The actual Capitol building, yeah. You know, 'cause it's going, you just, like, see everybody there, and it's just,
that first tee shot is nerve wracking. Like, that's one of the more nerve wracking shots in
for us. Yeah. I was weirdly less nervous than I thought I would be, but I was still nervous.
You pured it off that first.
Because I, like, hosel skanked this hybrid that didn't get higher than a foot off the ground.
See, I did the opposite. I hit, like, just a mega queef monster. It actually played close to the hazard. Yeah. Had a great angle.
It was kind of the dragon queef.
My favorite anecdote that happened to me at the Oak Course was I was playing 17 and just hit a beautiful drive. Just a big cut around the hotel, sitting in the middle of the fairway. The pin's kind of on the right side, so you're not really dealing with the bunker there. And I hit, again, you know, a common theme, just a terrible approach shot. And it actually, like, it's right, and it catches the road, and it bounces up over the wall. Out of bounds. So I play out the hole and I play out 18 and I'm sitting behind 18 waiting for you guys to come in and just minding my own business. And this older gentleman walking a dog, you know, just comes up to me. He sits down and after about 10, 20 seconds, he's like, he just kind of out of the side of his mouth goes, "What happened with that second shot on 17? And I just started laughing, and I blamed it on my caddy, who was phenomenal, Caddy Danny. It definitely wasn't his fault. But, you know, we just got to talking for about 10 minutes. He's a local. But just that guy had been walking, saw me hit, you know, on 17, walked into town, obviously saw me sitting on 18, and, you know, would say that to me. It's just like, that's kind of St. Andrews. That's the Old Course.
You were getting some shouts from the Jigger Inn, too, playing 17. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I after I hit it OB, I dropped and played, you know,
an Irish drop.
No, this was a real drop. Yeah, a proper drop. And so I hit up greenside. I was standing over my putt, which was for five, I guess. But these guys thought I was putting for birdie, and they go, "Hey, Stretch." They're American. I'm like, I know they're talking to me. I'm like, "Yeah, what's up?" He's like, "You know, if you make birdie on the road hole, nobody's going to believe you back home." And I go, "Well, this is actually for five." And they go, "Well, okay, all the same."
Cheers.
Yeah. And I ended up two putting for six. But just the you know, you just are constantly just interacting with people. On and off the course, it's like intimate. It's wild. It's
a public park. You can walk around the golf course. You don't have to have a tee time to go out and walk the golf course if you want to. And Sundays they are closed entirely, and it is people, you can picnic in the 18th fairway if you want to. I mean, Scotland's the best. It's the best.
It was the most engaged. I mean, probably the best round I played on the whole trip. But it was the most engaged I've ever been in a round of golf.
Yeah, you shot 76 first go around with two doubles, right?
Yeah,
first go around the old course.
And allegedly, no, yeah, none of us were there to verify.
There's no one to attest.
Yeah,
the guy at the Gucci sweatpants is our only witness.
The road hole is legitimately the coolest hole I've ever seen in my life. Like,
yeah,
you can't even concept it.
Yeah,
if
you could execute it if you built that course.
I kind of agree with that. It's the best.
We finished the round. I was the last one to finish in the rain. I came down, and you guys were at the Jigger Inn. We all met up at the Jigger Inn for beers. And I don't know if you guys could tell, but like when we got there, the smiles on your guys' faces when we got there. You guys were having some beers with some. You played with some Aussie podcast listeners, I think.
And yeah, they were there for 2 months. They were in Scotland for 2 months. Like we're kind of going around, right. And people are like, "Oh, you guys playing a lot of golf?" I'm like, "Oh, listen to all the golf we're playing." And I asked these guys, and they're like, "Yeah, we're over here. We're getting a pretty big trip. We're over here about 2 months."
And actually, we saw them the next day at Crail, and we're hitting it down their fairway, and they're hitting it down our fairway.
Yeah, they were great.
Yeah.
So had some beers, the Jigger Inn. That's kind of the in a 24-hour span had the St. Andrews experience. I think we would have loved to have spent more time there and gotten out to the new course and gotten out to the Eden course.
Eden
I never actually played the
sick.
Eden. Yeah, love to play Jubilee.
Yeah, I mean you could go surely you could go just to St. Andrews for 5-6 days and only play golf there.
Correct.
Under the St. Andrews umbrella. You could go to the. Oh gosh, we should do a whole separate podcast about ladies' putting club.
Tell us about it.
Do we even want to go there?
Well, so that's...
There's a lot to unpack.
We'll try to do it really quick. So you guys woke up the next day and went and played Crail. For the travel series, Randy and I thought it'd be beneficial for us to go kind of get into town and see what we could scare up. We ended up mostly just hanging out at the St. Andrews Ladies Putting Club for, maybe, I don't know, 2 hours. And the quick history that we learned from our guy Kevin... The new manager of the
Himalayas.
The Himalayas, which was the first thing he informed us. It's not actually pronounced Himalayas, it's pronounced Himalayas. And was basically that this wild putting green that all these tourists, and a lot of people listening are probably very familiar with, is actually owned by the St. Andrews Ladies Putting Club, which was formed as kind of a thing for all of the wives.
Putting Society, isn't it?
Putting Club.
Oh, okay.
You're thinking of the Jacksonville Beach. Okay. Putting Society,
correct.
Which is forthcoming.
Gotcha.
More to come on that in a future episode. But the land. So this club was started by basically the wives of the RNA members back in the day.
Like 150 years ago.
Yeah, all the RNA members were men, and so the wives kind of needed something to do. They liked golf as well, so they started this putting club, and they let the public go out there and basically play for nothing. I mean, it's like £2 or.
A pound for seniors and kids.
Yeah.
I think £3 for adults.
But whenever they want to have challenges, like putting comps, as they call it.
Medals.
They close it down, and Kevin has to go kick everybody off and explain what's going on. And they all get dressed up, and they come in, and they have tea, and then they have these one-on-one putting matches. And Randy and I were watching this for a long time because all of these women who are – kind of probably north of 60, 65, I would say. Some as old as
skewed
I think
older.
90,
yeah.
They were saying.
Yeah.
They have just dead weight from like 40 feet. 50
over
feet,
like three over humps, around a bend.
Yeah. And they all knock it like inside 3 feet almost every time. And then they all have the yips inside 3 feet. And so it's just this crazy, wild, interesting thing. And, anyways, it blew my mind, and it made me think, like, man, if there was a putting society in Jacksonville Beach, I would – one night a week, you just go have putting matches with guys and drink beers
and some
guys
of them
and gals,
really
I should say.
Really under the radar, kind of bitchy. And
I think there's some internal – yeah, I think with
very
any –
gossipy.
With any
club,
it seemed –
got little, all that in 2 hours.
A little clicky. Yeah, we were talking to one of the members, and she was kind of filling us in on some
a source
of the,
familiar with the situation.
Yeah, some of the politics. There's a disqualification that somebody was rankled about from a previous medal. They have like 100 – I don't know. That might be – They have heaps of medals though.
Yeah,
I mean
that was a
different
takeaway
cups
from the whole
and
trip.
Contests and competitions.
Just how many comps all these clubs have?
So we caught them on a
explain medals. Yeah, let's do that.
Well,
sorry.
Yeah,
after,
go ahead.
After you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, basically, the medals are they have all these competitions that where they essentially play for a medal, not just club championships.
Like
they
one
have
or
the,
two a week.
Yeah, yeah, they're just like, oh yeah, big competition, and you there's all these historical medals that
you
the
could have a
three
club medal, you yeah. could have a match play stable, you know, you get a Stableford medal, and then they have cups, which, as the gentleman at Crail explained, like the transition from medals, which were kind of based in military lore and military tradition, because a lot of the club uniforms were like military.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah. I'm surprised, you know, certain club companies haven't instituted medals for their sponsors. But then they transitioned to cups, which was basically to promote the social feeling amongst them. So the cups would, you know, you would drink out of the cup at, so like the claret jug, that's, you were like, it's not only respectful to drink out of it, it's like you're like legally required to drink out of it.
That's why it was a disgrace when Zach Johnson ate corn on the cob out of the claret jug. You're supposed to drink out of it. Sorry to interrupt you, but continue where you're going with the medals.
Well, yeah, so the ladies play for all these different medals and caught them on a Wednesday match play, 18-hole match play medal.
Good matches coming down. We saw a couple go to extra holes.
Yeah.
Don't spoil it for the contest.
Yeah, look, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, not many concessions.
Well, so
because of the yips.
Right, yeah. And so the last thing I'll say kind of about the whole, you know, clubs and that kind of thing is I was thinking about just personally and how much more golf it would make me want to play if I belonged to something like that. Because right now, you know, fortunate to have you guys living in the same town and, you know, always kind of pulling to go play golf or to go do something. But I'm sure a lot of people listening to this don't have that before
this trip. I don't think I'm going to be pulling out to play golf anymore.
Yeah, yeah. You'll
putt with us though, won't you?
Thinking about a lot of people listening to this probably have that situation where it's like, you know, they're serious golfers, but they don't have a ton of golfing friends or whatever. And having like a putting, not a putting society, but having like a golf club like this where you constantly had 50 people pulling at you like, hey, come play the three club. Hey, come do this. Hey, come do this. Hey, come do this. God, think about how much more golf that would make you want to play rather than, hey, maybe we can find like a 7:52 tee time. It's going to be like $60.
And we'll
like,
play a four ball.
Yeah, do you want to play or not play? It's so easy to be like, no, not really. I'm good. But the whole structure of it is so much different. It's just so much more conducive to actually playing golf.
And that's what's genius about the kind of the derivative nature of these clubs, where you can have multiple clubs around the same course. So you can have just different, you know, social feelings in different clubs. Like one can skew younger and more social, and
it's like the new club at St. Andrews is
right.
A lot of college students, and a lot of guys that caddy over at King's Barnes, and
as opposed to obviously like the RNA where you have to wear a sport coat to even walk in.